You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The Celtic Exchange, a fresh insight on Celtic Football Club.
Celtic are back on top of the Scottish Premiership table, but with just 8 games now remaining, will they still be there when it matters most? We'll debate all of that and much more on tonight's Celtic Exchange Weekly. This is Tino, and tonight I'm joined by James and Miff as we once again cover all things Celtic. Miff, welcome back after a short break for yourself. Would you believe this is now episode 150 of the Celtic Exchange Weekly? What's your reflections on those beautiful times we've shared the last few years?
Hello Tino, hello James, hello listeners. 150... Does it feel like that? It still feels new to me, which I suppose is a good thing. Been a bit of a roller coaster, a lot of ups and downs, mainly ups though, to be fair. So, although the start was traumatic, just very, very traumatic. And if MD's a new listener, if you wanted to go back and listen to those episodes, they are available in the vault somewhere.
Don't recommend it.
You know, we'd people actually contacting Tino to see, was I all right?
Is he all right? As the
2020 season was imploding. But no, it's been great, and well, we're still going, so must be doing something right.
Must be. We launched on a very interesting date in Celtic's history, James. It was the quadruple treble final, the delayed Scottish Cup final, where eventually Chris Iyer scores a winning penalty. But it wasn't all roses or a bed of roses at that time, as we know. Obviously, that was a historic. It was Paddy's Day yesterday, I'm struggling. It was a historic occasion, and it papered over the cracks to a huge extent. It was a rough old time back at episode one.
Yeah, and it was that. You know, the treble from the year before, and it just felt, you know, great to get it, obviously, but it wasn't kind of hiding anything. We knew the wheels were off the cart kind of thing, so, and lo and behold, it went exactly as we thought it would, despite the board's insistence on not changing things.
Yeah, so, and here we are. 150 episodes in the can. Thanks to everyone for all their support, and hopefully many more in the years ahead. Let's cover a wee bit of the St John's game, obviously. James, you and I covered the final whistle show, so that's there for anyone on podcast or YouTube that wants to check it out. But good to see Kyogo back to something like his best form.
Yeah, just he looks happy. That's always the thing, Kyogo. You know, is he looking happier? You know, the last few months he's been looking frustrated. I would say that's been the prime emotion. But yeah, happy and just good movement. You know, scored his goal, had others chalked off, but his movement was outstanding throughout. A lot of balls didn't get put to him that could have done. So he could have given more, but just seeing him happy and fluid and playing good football.
Yeah, he's got a goal, Miff, an assist, 2 chopped off goals, and he's hit the underside of the bar. It's a busy day, but he's getting in these areas. You'll be delighted to know, great credit must go to Greg Taylor for his pass for Celtic's second goal. I've watched it back a couple of times. It's a brilliant ball just beyond the right side defender for St Johnson into the path of Kyogo. He takes one touch, flashes it across goal, doesn't need to look. He knows his winger should be coming in. And he is, and Nicholas Kuhn tucks it away. But yeah, Kyogo, sparkling for him.
Yeah, and again, I still insist that Kyogo's travails this year have been down to his injury more than anything else. I think he's struggling. I think he, you know, he's not fully fit, and anything we're getting from him is a bonus, to be honest. That said, there has been times where he's looked really isolated, times where he's looked, quite frankly, scunnered, to use a Scottish word. I'm not sure what the Japanese would be for that. But Saturday's performance was reminiscent of the performances you got from him under Ange, which is the most pleasing thing. I think it's also noteworthy that he now has a winger who seems to be adept at going both sides of the fullback, as an on the outside coming inside to create a bit of jeopardy in the defence. That will naturally stretch them out a bit further rather than them being able to condense in, because they know everything's going coming inside, coming inside, coming inside. And I think Kuhn's upturning form will actually create more space for Kyogo. So listen, we know how good he is. He's a quality player. To get him confident for the run-in of the season is absolutely brilliant and can only be good news for us as a club.
It's got to be. And we were debating ahead of the game whether it should be Adam Eder or Kyogo. But actually, when you think the fact that we've got one more game and then the Rangers game, you've got to have Kyogo up to speed for that. And thankfully, he put in the kind of shift that he did on Saturday. Really valid point, Miff, on Nicholas Kuhn as well. James and I were there together. And when he was standing up the left fullback for St Johnstone, the guy didn't know whether to stick or twist, because Kuhn has the ability to do that cut inside thing, which he'd done for the first goal, or go on the outside, and the guy's got a real quandary.
Just on that point, on the back of the Livy game, where I thought maybe Kuhn had just benefited from playing against a relatively poor side, lacking in confidence, albeit that Livy really kind of had a go on the day. A lot of people came away for that game thinking Kuhn hadn't played particularly well, whereas I was of the opposite view. I thought he was excellent and he looked really dangerous. And the reason I thought he was excellent was because he was trying different things. Mm-hmm. The previous games, and we now know, which wasn't disclosed at the time, we now know that he's had some sort of dental issue, which meant he's lost a bit of weight, lost a bit of power. Probably explains why he wasn't taking MD on in those first few games. That's not the case now. Mm-hmm. He's got that confidence, and when he's taking people on, he's beating them, which is the best thing. It's not, he's not just trying, he's actually achieving what he's trying to do. So for me, it's great news. I think we've been crying out for a winger that just runs at people and beats people, but with that has to come patience for the fans and understand that when these players are taking a gamble, he can't be getting on their back every 2 minutes or every time they lose the ball. They're employed to take risks, take people on, and it means we might cough up possession every now and then. Probably the manager has to understand that as well, because we know he likes possession at all costs. But for me, having somebody like Kuhn is brilliant, because it makes the team better to watch, firstly, but secondly, it'll massively benefit Kyogo.
Definitely, and we'll get into a wee bit more detail on Kuhn and the other wingers at this moment in time later in the show. The other notable difference to the team was Liam Scales missing out. He started Celtic's last 36 games, and nobody would have predicted that at the start of the season. And credit to him, we've debated whether he's the long-term future or not for Celtic. But once again, Brendan Rodgers finds himself unlucky with injury. I was chatting to Brian, who sits next to us at the game, and he was saying the theory that he's getting is that a lot of these injury issues are training ground-led. You know, there's guys that are just playing 1 week and then all of a sudden something happens at Lennox Town. Muscle-type injuries, Louis Palma, Scales at the weekend. But what do you think? We're now chopping and changing again. It was Carter Vickers and Welsh at the weekend. I'm having a mare here.
Aye. As long as you started.
Carter Vickers and Welsh at the weekend. It's another new pairing. It's not ideal to be chopping and changing, is it?
No, but it is what it is. My opinion on it yesterday when doing the post-match was that as long as you've got CCV, it's certainly much, much less of an issue, if it's an issue at all. He's the calmness. So I think if that was Scales out and it was Welsh and Lagerbielke, that's a new pairing, and it's, you know, maybe not as confident as it would be if with Carter Vickers in the team. So it's not my biggest concern at the moment, to be honest with you. I think Scales has his limitations anyway, so I don't see a great difference between Welsh and Scales. We don't really know about Lagerbielke, we don't really know about Navrocki, because they've not played enough football. It looks like CCV and Navrocki is the preferred pairing, but how many times have we seen it, you know? So it's just, we need to make do and mend all the way to the end of the season and just get over the line.
We've also got Tomoki Iwata, who stepped back in there briefly. Or Iwata, as the BBC keep calling
him. What a slap in the dish.
Yeah, that's another story about Lagerbielke. As I mentioned, though, you can listen to the full match reaction to Celtic v St Johnstone in the Final Whistle show that myself and James recorded, wherever you get your podcasts or on YouTube. Before we kick on with the rest of the show, here's a quick update on a couple of extra shows we've got coming up this week on the Celtic Exchange. Of course, it's international week, so no games to preview or review. But on Monday today, we released the latest episode in the battle to save Celtic. So that's part five. It's caused a few comments, a few waves, because it's with well-known sports journalist Hugh Keevans. Not everybody's favourite. I think it's okay to say that. I don't think Hugh would mind us saying that. But I've got to say, James, he was a brilliant guest. And the reason we got Hugh on is because he was so pivotal during those times, pre-internet, pre-social media. He was so pivotal in keeping the Celtic message front and centre. And his stories are excellent. It's about an hour and 10 minutes long, and it's a really interesting recording. Have you checked it out? Have you listened to some of it?
I was listening to the way in there, aye.
So it's well worth checking out. Miff, as we know, doesn't listen when he's not on, so that's absolutely fine.
It's not the best show.
With no CSE stories coming up this weekend, we usually do that on a Wednesday, but we're missing that one out this week. But in the meantime, you can enjoy the episodes we've done so far with CSEs from Chicago, Swindon, Detroit and Geneva, no less, where Miff's pal Nick was on last week. He was great, gave you a few good mentions. He also said that he learned some dance moves off you in the Majestic days, back whenever that was, that he still uses to this day. Any response to Nick? And
well, I think that speaks for itself, you know. I don't think I really need to comment on that, you know. Just, what can I say? Nick is a good lad. He's doing really well for himself over in Geneva, so I know, good on him. It was nice that you got him on as well.
Yeah, so he was great on the show, so you can check that one out and all the other back episodes.
I still probably won't listen.
No, not for you.
I'm only kidding.
And on Friday, details still to be confirmed, but all going well, we'll have part 6 of the Battle to Save Celtic coming out on Friday. And as with all episodes so far, it's a really interesting guest we've got lined up, but I'll keep that one on ice for now and hopefully I can reveal details shortly. If you aren't already following or subscribing to the Celtic Exchange on YouTube, Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts, then do so now to ensure you don't miss a single episode. As we know, we now have a couple of weeks without a game due to that international break, so I just want to have a wee look at the moment at where we are as we close in rapidly on the top 6 split. Next game is Livy away on Sunday 31st of March, followed by Rangers away Sunday 7th of April, and then St Mirren at home on Saturday 13th of April. Miff, how do you see us faring in those three fixtures?
I think we won the three of them.
Okay.
I think we won the three of them. You wouldn't know Celtic had went back to the top of the league based on media
quiet,
coverage.
Quiet.
Been very, very quiet comparative to when Rangers went top. I have to say, I listened to Clement yesterday and agreed generally with a lot of what he said around states of the pitch and things like this, and around selling your product. What I've then been told, I have nothing to corroborate this, is that both teams had agreed to a quarter past 10 inspections. So I think that's, you know, the reason that we've got to this point is because of the mismanagement of that fixture. I don't really doubt Rangers would have won that, if I'm being honest. What it does do is it creates a wee bit of jeopardy, because that will get, I remember we lost the league title at Rangers in 2010, I think it was. I was on my way to Inverness and it got snowed off. We had then to play that midweek and we drew. I'm hoping for something similar here. I'm hoping that's the omens. It was a really, really tight league race. Game get rescheduled. We drew the game and that resulted in losing that league to Rangers. I'm hoping for something similar here. So hence why I'm so confident around us winning those three games. I think we seem to have gained a wee bit of form again. You know, there's winning games and then there's playing well. I think just the sheer amount of chances created bodes well. I'm now getting more confident that we're in this title race to win it.
What about yourself, James? An unusually optimistic Miff going for three wins out of three. What do you think?
It's knocked me for six. I don't know what I should reply to that. You know, I should be the opposite of you, but no, I'm with you all the way for the three games. Win at Ibrox, funny enough, I'd be happy enough with a draw because I think that puts us in the boss seat. But, you know, I don't think we know how to go and set up to draw games, so Rodgers will be going for it. It'll be a very controlled performance, but obviously two important games around that in Livingston and Mirren. So it's just, you know, we're in this title race, we're in the however many cup finals left now, and you've just got to win all three. It's as simple as that. So the players are coming back to form, coming back to confidence is a big thing.
Do you take a draw?
I think that's why I think we'll win the three, is because we have to. And the performances that we've shown this year against Rangers show that we are Rangers' problem, not the other teams. The other teams are our problem and not Rangers, is what, you know, the results suggest that so far. Now, unless Rangers have got something up their sleeve, they are probably a more confident team, but they were confident when they came to play at Celtic Park. They were
both,
very confident.
Both games this season, we were told they were going to get hammered.
So the reality is that if we bring a similar level of performance to these games, we'll be fine. Livy away is a sticky one because Rodgers doesn't have a great record there. Just found out today they've got tickets for that, by the way, so delighted at that.
For all of us.
And, you know, St Mirren will be a difficult game, naturally, but all we can do is just take it one game at a time. And psychologically, the fact we are back at the top of the league, that should hopefully give the players that little spur. And I think Rodgers has been quite good in what he said around just looking after ourselves. I agree, you know, the mentality has to be just, you know, win the games that you're involved in. Don't bother about what anyone else is doing. Just concentrate on the next game that's coming up. Get the 3 points in the bag. If we keep that mentality and maintain the same level of performance, I think we'll be okay.
Yep. Hope so. James Miff's given his opinion on that Dundee game and the situation there. So what's your take on the fact that Rangers now need to fit that in somewhere? The suggestion is it might be before we play them, which is a headache they could do without, you know, if they're linked to try and keep players fit and fresh and whatever. But that added to the fact that, as Miff says, we're now top of the tree regardless for the next couple of weeks. What do you think of the psychological impact of that?
Yeah, I mean, they've got to play that game the week before us or the week after us. And if you're them, you probably want it before, because if it's after, you know, we can streak four ahead then. Mm-hmm. So, but neither are good. You know, it's congestion. As to how it happened, yeah, I think it's poor in terms of communication. You know, they're still football fans.
I think Clement said the kit man arrived early. Rangers kit man arrived early. He was the only person that contacted Rangers. I mean, all joking aside, travelling up, blah, blah. You've seen it all on social media, but that's ridiculous.
Yeah,
that's absolutely ridiculous.
And, you know, we've all been fans going to games, games called off, and it's frustrating. So I get, you know, you're like, try to sell a game, make a better product. So, but then there was two games off in England yesterday, I think, for waterlogged pitches. So, you know, if I've got that right, but, you know, it's the fourth game Dundee have had postponed this season.
They've got issues there.
So there has to be a standard, much like there should be length of grass, you know, number of ball boys, blah, blah, blah. These things the league can mandate, and one of those things they should be mandating is how you manage your pitch and your ground. I mean, Dundee's ground is pretty shoddy in terms of in and out and all that stuff. It's dangerous, you know.
Have they not got... I'm going off piste here, but have they not got plans to move ground? Is that something?
Just not far away, but a couple of miles away, but it's a long way away, I'd say.
Because obviously, you know, we're talking about we want plastic pitches outlawed, and I think there's a ruling on that due out about now.
It's a vote this month.
Kelly are obviously about to go back to grass. They're making a change.
But in 2 years.
2 years, okay. Livy will probably get relegated, so we don't need to worry about it for now. But there's the problem. Yes, we want the AstroTurf pitches out, but you also need to have decent grass pitches. You can't have what's going on
there. Drainage. You know,
yes, so yeah. You need to have the drainage, which makes it a decent pitch. And you've got a situation there, but it's kind of amateurish, isn't it? You know, this is the top flight in Scottish football. It's hardly like it's been monsoon weather out there. It's been heavy rain, but it's not been
consistent
too much. And all of a sudden, you're finding a run of the mill fixture cancelled. So it's a Rangers problem now, Miff, but just to be balanced on it, it's not a great look for the Scottish Premiership. In terms of just going back to those three fixtures on how Celtic will be fixed for them, there is a strong chance we'll have Rio Hatate and Callum McGregor back, and a wee bit less clear on Liam Scales and Louis Palmer, who's picked up his injury. But how huge a boost could it be to have those first two players I mentioned back?
I mean, both walk into your team. It's as simple as that. You know, that's your midfield engine when the two of them are flying. I think it's going to come too soon for Rio, saying this in the post-match yesterday. Just when we've seen him coming in before, rushed back. Yeah, more in terms of his stamina he struggled with. He just looked puffed out early doors in a game he came back in just this season, I think. So I would hold back on him having the bench. Calamack, 100%. If he's fit, if he's even close to fit, he starts that game for me, and that's a huge boost, yeah.
Miff, you would say that if he is fit, and as a big if, Rio Hatate comes in and just immediately takes that spot, which Paulo Bernardo's kind of playing with at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. What a buzz it would be for the last eight games, whatever, would you say, Dertino, if we could actually see a starting 11 containing Vickers, Hatate and McGregor. There's absolutely no doubt we're just simply a better team with those three in it, and to be quite frank, there isn't a better team in the league than us when we have those three in it. Add to that a rejuvenated Kyogo. Mm-hmm. That's where my confidence comes from. It's not hard, you know. I'm not being unnecessarily optimistic. It's just the spectre of having our best players back, who are proven winners, makes me confident that we'll win the games that we've got coming up.
And again, from a leadership point of view, James, Callum McGregor, you rely on him less so at home to St Johnstone, but you need him for away to Tynecastle. You'll certainly need his presence for away at Ibrox.
Yeah, that's it, because it's more than his football ability. It's his ability to galvanise the team and lead the team. Yeah, it's, I mean, you saw that at Hearts. Nobody was, you know, taking the game of the scruff of the neck and fighting back with your 10 men and your penalty given away. You know, he would have been instrumental there, so there's no doubt we've missed him. I think he was tired himself. I think he needed a rest, you know, as much as the injury has enforced it. I think he could have done with the rest anyway. So he comes back, and you know what he's like when he comes back. He's just, I was going to say something inappropriate there. He comes back just like a dog with two or something, but nah, it doesn't work. He's just very, very, you know, he comes out of the traps hard and fast. just get out of this conversation.
keep it PG. Maff, just the last question on that subject. Do you take the gamble with Rio Hatate? He's had such a stop start season. He's come back too soon.
I'm with James on that. I think history has shown us that coming back in and starting games probably is a wee bit too much for him. But you know, how good a player would that be to bring on at Ibrox last 20 minutes?
Yeah.
I mean, you need to keep the ball, maybe absorb a bit of pressure. I would be keeping Hatate in reserve until such times as we feel we could last 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Agreed. So yeah, so three huge games before the split. Lavia away, Rangers away, St Mirren at home. But don't worry, Miff Scott is winning all three. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll take a look at Celtic's options in the wings as Kun, Yang, Maeda and a re-emerging Jamesy Forrest battle out for the starting places in the team.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewellery from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back, folks. So Nicholas Kuhn, he's now picked up man of the match in Celtic's last two games. And Miff, in those two games, James Forrest has come off the bench and picked up an assist and a goal. Where do you want to start?
Let's just start at James Forrest, you know.
Okay.
Let's start. The bottom line is, football works where you play your best players. And for all you can talk about, you know, profile of players and what stage of that in their career, and I know There are many Celtic fans out there that say if Celtic's best starting 11 contains James Forrest, then that's a problem. But that's a problem with recruitment, I would say. Not necessarily a problem with James Forrest.
Of course.
Because you know what James Forrest is going to bring. He brings goals and assists. Sometimes what you have to go through with Jamesy in between those goals and assists can be quite frustrating. I get that. But for me, he is exactly a Rodgers type winger, because if he's not going to take his man on, he's not got space to do it, he'll recycle the ball and he'll keep it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of some of our wingers aren't doing that on a regular basis. They're just really giving the ball away mindlessly quite a lot. So for me, he's been underutilised at a time when his experience and his ability could probably have helped us massively. So you know, I'm a huge fan. I'm just delighted to see him contribute and show that he's worth a place in the squad, especially when in January, you know, the latter part of the window, the rumour was we were
Cardiff
going to listen to bids for him and ship him out the door. So it's great to see him back in the team and contributing, and what a vital goal it was.
It really was, and it was a great finish. And we said in the post-match, James, out with anything, he's fit as a fiddle. He's really looking after himself as a pro, and what he's basically doing is saying, I know I won't start every game, but when the manager needs me, when the team needs me, I'll be ready to come in and do my job. And his game's changed, Miff. He's not the tricky, pacey winger that he once was, but what he still is a very good technician. He's very good in the ball, takes it well, moves it on well, and he rarely gives away possession. He's quite a low-risk winger now. You know, if he doesn't feel he can get by the guy, he doesn't try it. He just turns back, pops it in the midfield, and Celtic keep the ball. Maybe that's something Rodgers does like. He's got a possession-based model. But James, I think we've agreed, we've not told Miff, but we've agreed that he generally shouldn't be starting many games for Celtic. But you can't fault the fact that he was out the picture for 12 games, didn't kick a ball for 12 games, and he's played his part there the last two.
Yeah, and I don't think James is at a stage where he's expecting to start games. He knows the cycle of a footballer, that's the way it goes. But he's a reliable pair of hands to bring on in those last 20 minutes.
Pair of feet.
Yeah, a pair of feet. To bring on those last 20 minutes. And a lot of players, when they get that kind of substitution, they come on and they just pass the time of day. You know, they don't really, you know, they're not that impactful. He wants involved straight away, and he was involved straight away, and not just his goal, just he was involved in a lot of the kind of build-up play and, you know, possession play as well. So it's... it's fine, but it is a problem with recruitment that is your reserve winger. You know, we have been unfortunate with wingers, you have to say, but injuries and stuff like that, but also some poor choice signings. So we'll see where it goes next year, but I don't know what's best for James. Is it best to take a move because he's still got a lot of football to contribute, I'll say that much. And if he's not going to get a chance to do that at Celtic, he should be doing it somewhere.
Yeah, he might review his options at the end of the season. But for the now, he's got a part to play. 8 league games left, Miff, hopefully 2 cup games. And I think James will be in and around the squad for that. What about Nicholas Coon, James? We watched some of his early stuff in a Celtic shirt and didn't completely write him off, but it was concerning what we're seeing. As Miff now explains, and we'll all have seen, he had some dental issues, he lost a bit of weight, he lost some pace, some power. But in these last 2 games, he's actually looked like a different player altogether. And he only got in because Yang all of a sudden found himself suspended and Louis Palmer now injured.
John Beaton's fault, isn't it? John Beaton gets Coon back in. I thought it was the best wing performance from a Celtic player this season. Just in terms of, see what you were saying about having the defender not knowing if he was going left or right. That is everything a winger is trying to do, is get the defender into that state of mind.
Dare I say a bit like James Forrest?
Ambitious. So he's done that. So yeah, it was the most complete wing performance for me for this season. But this is now given us, you know, I tried to kind of bring up yesterday and you weren't really having it, but with Yang being on form, only forced out through suspension, and Coon definitely being on form, you've got 2 good wingers there. Coon can play left or right. I think he played left a lot with Rapid. So my preference would be for 2 very good football players to be on the wing, in Yang on the right and Coon on the left, rather than Maeda. I know Maeda, Rangers, loves it, keeps him pegged in. But if you're just playing your football, fast-flowing football, you don't need to defend as much when you're 3-4 up.
I wasn't having it in yesterday's chat because I was tired. It was a Sunday. I wasn't entertaining any more questions. But let's have that discussion.
Now you've got your Paddy's Day hangover.
And now I'm fresh as a daisy. Yeah. But let's have that debate just now. So let's look at the bigger picture. Yang will return from suspension against Livy. Dyes Maeda continues to go about his work as he always does, you know, hard worker, kind of just gives you a constant, sometimes nonsense, sometimes brilliant. He's doing so much with an increasingly longer head of hair. He said in a statement or an Instagram post or something, he's trying to mirror, is it Mutoma at Brighton, who I think has got a bob? So
his daughter said make it like him.
No, it was Minamito that used to play Liverpool.
All right. Okay, so he's grown it out, which, don't know, I've spent a lot of time on that. I talked about it last week as well, so I'll skip past that. But what you've got is Yang and Maeda challenging Coon and James Forrest all of a sudden. So you've got 4 guys there. Marco Tello's way out the picture. He's obviously on loan at Melbourne. Louis Palmer injured for the foreseeable. So with those 4 options, Miff, to James's point, what is your go-to wingers all of a sudden? Do you like the idea of Yang on one side with Coon on the other, or do we need Maeda in there? What do you think?
Maeda and Coon, for me. Yang getting suspended, when you end up out the team's winning, that's just unfortunate. He will no doubt get chances over the course of those 3 games to try and get back into the team, and I think Yang's an excellent option to bring off the bench because he's very direct. For me, Yang's a player for next season, Coon's a player for now, and I don't think you can go to Ibrox and not start Maeda. It's just my personal opinion. History shows you that. Same as you wouldn't go to Ibrox and start James Forrest, because history shows you that as well. You know, as much as I love James, he tends not to give his best performances at Ibrox. So you go with the tried and tested. You know, somebody like Maeda, whose performances at Ibrox, if you look back over the victories and results that we've achieved there, he's been nothing short of phenomenal. So for me, you don't mess with that. But a rejuvenated Coon's a very, very interesting option, because he's maybe not quite as fast as Maeda, but he's fast, and it would probably be the first type of game that he would have since he's been rejuvenated, but he's going to have a lot of grass to run into. So for me, having a couple of pacey direct wingers there, it's a very exciting prospect. So for me, it would be Coon and Maeda. Maeda's work rate is unquestionable, but he pops up with goals as well. I'm just really excited by the fact Coon started showing something a wee bit more. So fingers crossed they come through international break and the Livy game unscathed, and they're fit and ready to go for going to Ibrox.
Yeah, James, the wingers that you would play against Livy's low block is potentially different to Rangers at home, who will, you know, open up and come out at different times. So I suppose, you know, the question is, all fit and available, who are your wingers versus Rangers? But can you afford to tinker with that at Livy, or do you need to go with the ones at Livy that you think you're going to play against Rangers?
Yeah, I think it's a dress rehearsal, isn't it? You know, Carter Vickers maybe the only one we need to watch, obviously the Livy pitch and stuff, but most of the players, if not all the players that start against Livy, will be the ones expected to start against Rangers. So I think, you know, the way you've, you know, kind of ran through the Yang Maeda debate there, it is the sensible move, you know, and Rodgers is a pretty pragmatic, sensible manager. So I suppose it's an endorsement from Miff to Rodgers, really, is what we're looking at.
Vice versa.
Yeah.
the other thing about Yang is, I think Yang, I know we've said this before, James in particular, I can always remember he's eulogising about Hatskabanovic, and I was on board, by the way, because we thought he was going to be somebody that would come in and be a bit of an understudy to the likes of Jota and then take over. Obviously just never kicked on. I think Yang for next season, with a season under his belt, will be a very, very exciting prospect.
I was really excited about Yang heading into that Hearts game, and that's why it was such a double whammy. Losing anybody at Tynecastle, going down to 10 men, leaves you with a mountain to climb. But he was your on-form go-to guy, and that was a frustration.
And he had started the game relatively well.
Yeah, mm-hmm. he was on it.
But if you maintain that now all of a sudden that's how football goes, and Kuhn has done what all decent players should do and taken advantage.
Absolutely. And also, it's came to light that he's had an issue.
Yeah.
And it's hard enough making a move, new country,
a stone for an athlete, you know.
Big move in relative terms. So for me, I think it's Kuhn deserves immense credit for the way that in a short space of time he's got himself back fit, but also seems to have gained a confidence, because the issue we've got a winger on loan who's written up the championship, Mikey Johnson. He lost his confidence playing at Celtic Park. So if you've not had a good start to your career, turn up at Celtic Park in a cup game, and you're thinking, all right, here we go. Kuhn to show the bottle or the character that he has to do that, I think deserves immense credit when he's career hadn't got off to a great start. And it's unfortunate for Yang, because Yang's not necessarily done anything wrong. You can argue that sending off was harsh, but that's football. If again, to contradict the point we made earlier about the fact that Forrest is playing, if you have done your recruitment right, and you lose your place in the team for whatever reason, whether it be illness, injury, loss of form, sending off, there should be another player in there who's capable to come in and take your place, and that's what's happened here for me.
It's a squad game, and I suppose we've ended up in a situation where we've had a gap in the wings, and Kuhn's come in and plugged that gap in the last couple of games. I mean, when the team came out for the Livy game a couple of weeks ago, James, I think a lot of folks will have rolled their eyes at Nicholas Kuhn starting again, given what he'd turned in up until that point. But I think now you're looking at excitement when he's named. You know, the likelihood is he'll get the nod against Livy, and I think fans are now excited to see this guy. It's the cliched thing about Celtic fans wanting to be entertained. And from that point of view, it's wingers and strikers that get you the most excited. And I think all of a sudden, the fans are excited about Nicholas Kuhn.
Yeah, and he's got that chance to show consistency. You know, what Yang had done was shown he can do it, and then obviously, unfortunately, get taken out by Beaton. But now, you know, he hadn't done it consistently, and he was getting his chance to do it consistently. Kuhn's now in that seat. And that's when you can really start to back a player, when you see it's not flashing the pan or hit and miss, it's every single week. What it really does is, you know, if we're having that debate with Yang and Maeda and stuff, starts making our bench a lot stronger, and that's been one of our biggest problems all season. You've been looking at first 11s going, right, okay, that should be enough, and you look at the bench and go, that's weak. And now it's not. You've got guys who are on form, talented, on the bench, ready to come off the bench. You know, you're talking about having Riho Tati on the bench, you have an informed Yang on the bench, you might have Palmer coming back on your bench. Game-changing stuff.
Yeah, Adamida too is a decent backup. Yep. Just quickly, while you've kind of touched on it, and John Beaton's had a few mentions already, you'll have seen the news,
crowbarring it in,
or heard the news at least today, that Crawford Allen is stepping down as head of referees. Is he stepping down, James, or was he pushed, or what's your assessment of that news?
The timing's funny. Celtic are about to go and take a legal case to the SFA regarding referees. So as far as that goes, that's certainly a blink in terms of the SFA. There's an unfounded rumour, and a rumour that they can't find the audio tapes from the Hearts game. Is that true, Miff?
It's an unfounded rumour that I had also heard. But I'm, as you know,
I wouldn't believe it.
I'm prone to a lot of unfounded rumours. So thanks for having me, James. Cheers.
Do you think there's something afoot, Miff? Is it just a case of a guy's maybe thought this isn't for me, or has he been nudged?
I think he's absolutely scunnered at all the flack that's came his way, but he's not been helped by his referees in the implementation of the budget VAR.
But also how he manages and how he responds and flies back for holiday to shout Kyo goes offside.
Well, the budget VAR they brought in hasn't helped because, you know, like I've said, we've had a laugh about the cameras at my mum's tour for parking, things like that, but it's just not been of the standard. We talk about the pitch at Dundee, talk about the way we implement VAR, it all goes back to it being that sort of, you know, bowling club mentality of the you know, those guys that run it. We are a parochial country and we are coming across as a wee parochial country in the way that we are trying to show that we're a professional, commercial footballing entity and not a backwater. Crawford Allen for me has been, you know, a failure in bringing across what should have been a positive message around how technology was going to help referees. He's became very defensive and also selective in when he's spoken out, and you know, you cannot, in the interest of balance, you cannot be the head of the referees in Scotland when that's the case.
No,
I think that's the biggest issue for them. Their messaging and their PR's all over the place. Actually, when they launched VAR, so remember Celtic played Hearts a year ago in October, that first game we ended up winning 4-3.
Subject to another very harsh handball shoot as well.
Yeah, Mike and a goal chalked off with Ralston, it shouldn't have been.
Correct. And Greg Taylor got the winner that day, I think.
Yeah, certainly did.
Yeah.
So, you know, launched a year and a half ago now. And actually, when they launched, there's a couple of things at play. They hurried it out. They hurried the release of it for some reason. It seemed so strange to do it mid-season, which means you've got a kind of skewed campaign where teams had played, I don't know, maybe 10 games up to that point.
I think we're halfway through. No, it was only in October, wasn't it? No, you think you'd done one run. So you've got half, you know, so many away games, it was all over the place.
Strange time to bring it in, first and foremost, but they brought it out with a message, and I'm paraphrasing along the lines of, it'll be a shambles, by the way. We're going to make a lot of mistakes to start with, so brace yourself.
That was Ian Maxwell, your chief exec.
That's right, it was Maxwell. Apologies to Crawford Allen, it was Ian Maxwell, but, you know, that's the game's governing body coming out with those messages. And since then, semi-recently, they kind of marked their own homework. They looked at, I don't know, 150 VAR calls and said, we only get three of them wrong, and I'm thinking,
I don't believe
it. It was just coming out in all sorts of strange ways, and as I say, their messaging's just been really poor from the start.
I also think if you're being fair to Crawford Allen, you know, we can have our different opinions on his competence or how he's done, but I'd imagine that role must be a very, very, very difficult role.
Doesn't
personally, in terms of the amount of strain that you must come under, and I'm not just talking about the whole Celtic Rangers thing. I mean, practically every club's been bemoaning how VAR's been implementing, the impact that VAR's then subsequently had on various different decisions and games and things. So it doesn't surprise me that anyone in that role would have a short shelf life.
Well, one thing the SFA could do to bat back against that kind of thing, and also the parochialism, is bring in someone out with the bubble. Mm-hmm. So what's most likely is the SFA go, right, who do we know? You know, who's the ex-Scottish referee that we're going to bring in? Why not bring in someone from England, or that Aussie guy that was doing well, you know, he was good at kind of comms in the VAR and all that kind of, if someone in that role, someone who's done it and done it successfully elsewhere, they won't do it, but that's what they should do.
They'll appoint internally, or it'll be somebody that we very much know from the historical world of Scottish football. There's guys like Bobby Madden's name's doing the rounds. He's been on a bit of a PR offensive in
recent
times.
You could put it past Andrew Dallas.
Andrew Dallas, yeah. So, I mean, I wonder if it's better the devil you know, but do you know what? The devil we know is not very good in Crawford Allen, so let's see if we can get a change of scene. And do you know, some fresh thinking at the SFA might be a breath of fresh air, but we'll see. Just to return briefly to Celtic's winger chat. So, spoken about the different guys that are available, who you guys think should start against Rangers and against Livy. And I know he's injured right now, but what does Lewis Palmer's Celtic future look like all of a sudden? Because he's injured right now, but he'd actually fallen out of the picture even before that. I'm a big fan. I thought he started really well. He had that big moment against Atletico Madrid. Very unlucky against Lazio with his offside goal. But you were less convinced, and, you know, he now finds himself out of the picture altogether.
I don't know if he is a winger. I think he's so predictable. He's a bit of a one-trick pony. You know, defenders read it.
He's everything that Kuhn is not.
Yeah.
Kuhn's got either side, each way. Yang seems to have a bit of that.
Bag of tricks.
Lewis Palmer, 9 times out of 10, maybe even more, steps inside.
Yeah. I think he might be a 10, so his Celtic future is, if we're playing any games that necessitate or accommodate a 10, then we could see something really special from him. It'd be very hard to judge him until you see him in his best position, but are we going to play with a real, you know, free-flowing 10? I don't think so.
I mean, he's 24, 25 years of age now. He signed as a winger. So unless there's a dramatic change there, I don't think we see him anywhere else, and we don't generally play with a 10. So I just wonder, he's a guy that I like. I think he's clearly got talent, yep. but it's getting the best out of that. And I just wonder what his Celtic future looks like. And Marco Tellyomaf, even less so, there's no point in wasting too much time there. It's not worked out, certainly in the early stages. He scored a couple of goals, I think, for Melbourne, one particularly good goal that you'll have seen the highlights of. I think he's now picked up a hammy injury, and he's out for 6 weeks. So we'll need to wait and see. But let's take another short break. When we return, Miff will be bringing us this week's Mystery Cell. Welcome back, folks. We're about to take a look at this week's Mystery Cell. But before we do so, let's look at last week's, which was provided by Joe, with some really sketchy clues, James, if you remember.
Aye, they were tough. Very tough.
But I think we've simplified them now. So clue number one, I've got over 50 caps for my country. Clue number two, either side of my time at Celtic, I was managed by two ex-Celtic players. And clue number three, I scored 15 goals in British football, and one of them was against Rangers. We struggled at the time. I'm still struggling now. But the answer was...
Stan Varga. Let's go Stan.
Stanislav Varga. So Stan Varga, signed for Martin O'Neill, by Martin O'Neill, in July 2003 from Sunderland. He then went back to Sunderland in August 2006 after 116 appearances. I was surprised it was that many. 116 appearances for Celtic and 14 goals. And as Joe indicated, he's got 54 caps for Slovakia. He won two league titles, two Scottish Cups and a League Cup. Your thoughts on Stan Varga?
I didn't like him. Nothing personal, but just I thought he was... a poor defender. He epitomised how not to defend an aerial challenge, always out to the D, particularly famous against Roy Mackay. I think he was the start of what Neil was talking about, that Celtic were forcing us down the slow lane. He was a serious downgrade on what had come before him. So, yeah, he wasn't my favourite. Sure, he was a nice big guy. He's obviously had a good career there and plenty of caps for his country. I wish him very well, but I wasn't sad to see him go.
Yeah, I think we actually got him on a free as such. I think he'd fallen out with Sunderland, wasn't playing, and he just negotiated out and we managed to get him. Miff, any thoughts in particular on Stan Varga?
I thought he overachieved at Celtic. I thought I wasn't happy with signing him for watching him playing in England. I thought he looked very stiff, kind of comedy, Buffon, mullet as well. So all those things combined. But he then decided to dye that blonde as well. He gets some blonde tips in there during his time at Celtic. But he actually became, he had his, you know, kind of dodgy moments, but I think he was largely consistent for Celtic. I think he'd done pretty well, and like you say, when he was here, he won things as well. He was part of an overall good Celtic squad. So, no, maybe not quite as harsh on Varga as James, but I certainly, be, you know, he's known in Leuven's territory and like that. But he's
I have the same box. I have them very similar.
Leuven's got a box out his cell.
But yeah, as I say, I was surprised. 116 appearances. He's played his part, and I think James does wish him all the best, then, do you?
Absolutely.
Yeah, so good luck to Stan Varga, whatever he's up to these days. Okay, Miff, what have you got for us this week?
Right, so I've got, I don't want to do a Joe on you here.
You're gonna.
I once played for Celtic. Uh-huh. I've got my first clue, I can timestamp, but I'm not going to timestamp it in my first clue, if that makes sense, right?
Just give us a clue.
So I was at Celtic for 3 years, but only made 12 first-team appearances.
Can you timestamp that, as you've suggested?
I'll come back to it.
Aye.
When did this game get so confusing? Aye. It used to just be three simple
points. I made 5 appearances for Scotland B, but never made an appearance for the full international team.
I've got Danny Fox in my head.
I left Celtic to rejoin the club I initially joined them from.
Burnley, was it? Danny Fox?
Something like that.
The timestamp...
Right.
Which will rule out Danny Fox.
Okay.
It's 2005 to 2008.
Played between 5 and he has Gordon Strachan's first 3 years.
It's only 3 years, I believe.
Aye, sorry. Aye. So just repeat them quickly then for everyone.
I was at Celtic for 3 years, but only made 12 first team appearances between 2005 and 2008. I made 5 appearances for Scotland B, but never made an appearance for the full international team.
That rules out Janinho.
I left to rejoin the club. I initially joined Celtic from. What I should point out is, when I was doing my research, I was very, very surprised that this player qualified for Scotland B.
I know, that's who I'm thinking of. Was he a left back?
You thinking of Danny Fox again?
No, there was somebody else that...
He was a utility player, you're on the right track.
That qualified for Scotland, but he was English, I think.
Aye.
Yeah, but I can't remember.
So nothing.
Keep thinking Danny Fox, other players around you, that.
You're definitely in the right. Yeah.
We might blurt out later in the show, but for now we'll need to concede.
I think you're very, very close to getting who it is.
Okay, and as always, we'll reveal the answer in next week's show. We'll also reshare the clues on socials for anyone who wants to have a go there. Remember, if you want to set the mystery celt for a future episode, just get in touch via Twitter and you can be the one providing the clues next time around.
Adam Matthews? He's Welsh. Closer?
Anyway, to close out the show this week, I want to take a look at an ex-Celtic manager who's been in the news today. You might have seen that Ronnie Dyla has been sacked by Club Bruges and Efran Juarez has been punted alongside him.
Juarez, talk about man, jeez.
What a combo.
The party starter.
Since leaving Celtic, Ronnie Dyla has managed Vålerenga in Norway, New York City, Standard Liège, and quite controversially, Club Bruges. Yeah, I think there was a lot of tension with the Liège fans when he made that move. He won the Scottish Premiership in 2014-15 and 15-16, and he won the League Cup in 2014-15. We'll famously remember he was robbed of a treble, or at least a chance of a treble, with that terrible handball decision against Inverness that was never given. But James, just in terms of Ronnie Dyla, how do you reflect on his time at Celtic?
I suppose it's mixed, isn't it? You know, he was seriously not backed. You have to say that
the signings he got given were woeful.
It was
Mubarak,
chief.
What a castle.
It was chief. Peter Law, sporting director era. You know, he just
director man. That's the word.
That's Law was running all your signings at that point, and he was just giving players to Dyla. It was so bad. He's obviously got talent himself. It was maybe a job too soon for him. I don't think he was meant to be there. Was a talk of Keane coming in?
He was meant to be Roy Keane's number two.
Yeah. But they've just went. Celtic went, oh, hold on a minute. We can save money and just make him the manager. In a very Celtic Peter Lowell style, so I suppose you can't really judge him fully because he wasn't backed. It was too soon for him, but you know he hasn't gone on to massive. Bruges is probably a very big job for him. To be fair, you know, New York City wouldn't say too big. Liège, bit of an underperforming club, but Bruges have been performing consistently in the Champions League for 10 years or so. So it was probably a big job for him. It was sad to see him go.
It seems quite an acrimonious split. They've put a statement out and they've been very blunt about it. No, thank you for your service, nothing like that. So I don't know what's going on there.
Headstrong guy. You know, he'll have made strong views.
I think so. And he lasted less than a year. He was 11 months in the job there. But just in terms of his appointment at Celtic, Miff, do you think it was the right kind of appointment at the time? You've got a new Rangers coming through, a bit of wiggle room. You know, there wasn't that kind of title race that we're seeing just now. You had the chance to maybe bring in a fresh appointment, a young up-and-coming European manager, rather than going back to the well for the same old kind of appointments. Do you think Celtic were right to experiment with something like that at that time in a kind of low-risk environment?
Absolutely, but they didn't execute properly.
100%.
It was a chance to bring in several youth team players to really, really back the academy, which had been producing up to that point, you know, like St McGregor and Forrest, and then Tierney, who emerged through Dyla. I think we should have done more around that, and we didn't. And then the list of players that Dyla was asked to work with is nothing short of criminal. But what I will say is, his first season, the team were excellent to watch. And we had the likes of Guidetti in the team, and we just never really kicked on after that, and then it became a bit of a hodgepodge, although, you know, we get Paddy Roberts towards the end of Ronnie's tenure. I loved him.
I was a huge fan as well. I was desperate for it to work, but a lot of folks, early bells, famously Chris Sutton actually, just realised.
And Sutton played a huge part in the apathy for the fans towards him, because Sutton was very, very vocal. What I also liked about it was JC in there as assistant manager.
Yeah.
And they're
getting your crunchies in.
Getting the crunchies done, showing the lads how it's done. Huge fan of that.
James, I think Ronnie Dyla himself has spoken out a couple of times since his exit, talking about the stress he was under, the pressure, it's something he wasn't used to. Coming from Scandinavia, and, you know, we're all banging on about Knutsen, who's the coach at Bodo Glimt. It's one thing doing well in that part of the world where there's a more balanced look at sport in general. You know, it's a madhouse here at the best of times in the west of Scotland, and to come from such a cultured part of the world to the nonsense that goes on here at times, I think he struggled to adjust to that.
Yeah, I mean, he came in and he was looking at the kind of lifestyle of the players and the nutrition levels.
No tomato ketchup in the canteen.
It's all over the place, man. These guys are meant to be professional athletes, come £1,000 a week, thousands of pounds a week, and they're, you know, treating their bodies like that. So he didn't really quite have the strength of character or the backing to fully implement what he wanted. Rodgers came in and went, you, and that was it, you know?
I think I may be speaking out of turn here, but the likes of Collins and Mulgrew,
that's exactly who.
Pretty much working against them. However, you look at other players individually, likes of Tierney, specifically Lee Griffiths as well, who benefited massively from working with Dial and Collins. So, and I would also credit Dial and getting the best out of Beaton and Rogic as well. Not necessarily the best out of Rogic, which subsequently came, but at the time, his career, Celtic career, was kind of floating about, and he managed to get Rogic in the team and playing every week, which then led us to, you know, Rodgers getting the best out of him after that. So, do you know, it's a really interesting point in Celtic's history, because I think they were quite close to doing something really, really, they did do something brave, but they could have executed it better. And I was in the camp that I really, really wanted it to work, because I don't know why, I just really connected with Dial as a guy. I thought he was quite intense, but you could see that he cared, and he still has a massive cult sort of following within the Celtic fans that just absolutely adore him.
I think in terms of the execution, the execution thing is key, that Celtic went, there's a young manager, you know, a coach type manager, but we'll not put the structure around him, which we're still paying for this day, because Celtic just won't bring in that structure, and we need it right now. You know, if we had had that then all the way through, but even now, to be bringing that in, and they won't do it.
The Ronnie Dyla appointment, I think they'd done it by half.
Yeah,
as you guys 100%. Have said, if you're doing it, do it, and do it right. I think Ronnie Dyla would have operated very well under a director of football. He has a head coach in its truest sense. He doesn't want to be the manager of the club. He doesn't want to have full control of every single facet of the football department, but he wants to be the guy that's on the training field implementing his ideas and improving players. And I think you could see him, if you've mentioned a few guys, he certainly brought Kieran Tierney and several others along at that time. I think, though, ultimately, he potentially wasn't a strong enough character. So you mentioned that there was a kind of mini revolt, and we may be speaking out of turn, but they're not coming on the show anyway. So Chris Commons and Charlie Mulgrew, they're the guys whose names pop up time after time. Charlie Mulgrew, did he walk off in a game under Ronnie Dyla?
Yeah.
Later claimed it was an injury. It was a wee bit unclear. Do you know the one I'm talking about? Yeah, was it Ajax maybe or something?
Was it not the Champions League qualifier? Was it not the Malmo game? No.
No, I'm not. Was Malmo not when he hooked Commons?
Commons punched the dugout and all that stuff.
Oh, was that Aalborg actually?
No, it doesn't really matter. Sorry. But there was lots of things going on that just wouldn't happen under a manager like Neil Lennon or Brendan Rodgers or Ange
Postecoglou.
Imagine coming in and punching Ange's dugout, your feet when they hit the ground. But I just think that shows that Ronnie Dyla didn't have full control over the playing squad at that moment in time. And I suppose if that's the case, you're always doomed to failure.
It's fairly inevitable, but that's the point of putting the structure in. You don't need to deal with that stuff. You know, director of football can handle that. You just coach the guys who want to be coached and want to play. And like you said, you know, he showed he could coach players to be better than they were when he first got them. You've also got to bear in mind that Rodgers took Dyla's team. You know, it was a good squad. Rodgers tweaked it a wee bit, but by and large, the players were the right players, you know, the ones that were performing, and took them on to a treble, you know?
Yeah, the sum of the parts was far better, far stronger under Brendan Rodgers, no doubt. But we wish Ronnie Dyla all the best. I'm not sure what his next move is. There was a suggestion, don't know how you guys feel about this, that he'd be a great guy to have around Celtic's academy. He's a great coach, a talented coach, good with younger players. Would you be open to something like that?
100%.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. From his point of view, though, I think he would probably look to be staying at the top of the game, at least for now.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a backward step, and sometimes I think certainly agents would advise managers that once you make that step, you don't get back.
Yeah.
It would be great for us. Would it necessarily be good for him? I don't know.
Yeah, well, at least we'll wait and see, but we wish him all the best, and let's see what his next move might be. I've just had a short bit of additional news. Myself and James and Joe covered it a wee bit last week, but we were talking about Daniel Kelly. It looks like he's just about to sign a new 4-year deal, which I think has generally got to be good news. And he continues to feature regularly now. All of a sudden, he's come off the bench the last four games, made his most recent appearance at the weekend against St Johnstone. What do you think about him? We were debating whether he was due a start, given that Paulo Bernardo's bringing very little to the table all of a sudden. Do you like what you've seen of him so far?
Big unit.
Yeah.
You know, normally, if you think of the players that have made their debuts for Celtic in recent history, like Savata, Ben Summers, you know, quite slight
Dawson,
players, modern players,
Owen
Moffat. You know, this lad's come on, looks a physical specimen, and seems to get about the park very, very well. He turned back, he's broke up an attack at the back, and then he's up supporting the counter attack very quickly. So looks to be getting himself about the pitch really well. I would agree. I think he's probably understated. Bernardo is a really curious one.
The ghost.
He, at times, looks a really, really elegant player. Then you don't notice he's even on the pitch. It's yeah. bizarre. Absolutely bizarre. So, yeah, again, it makes the signing of Bernardo, I suppose, Kelly's emergence has been relatively unexpected.
Mm-hmm.
But now that he's here, it raises the question of what happens to Bernardo, because if you've got a kid for the academy that's going to do just as good a job as somebody you might need to spend £4, £5, £6 million on, then there's a decision to be made there.
The summary after the game against St Johnstone that James and I came to was that he just had had kind of a nothing game. He wasn't great, he wasn't terrible, he just anonymous, which I suppose by default is poor. Mm-hmm. You've got to have an impact in the game. How would you feel, Miff, if we line up against Livy and it's Iwata in the holding role with O'Reilly and Kelly up ahead of him?
I'd be fine with that. I think it sends a good message to the rest of the squad, and it sends an excellent message to the guys in the B team.
Yeah.
We've got Boson Lawell as well, who
doing well.
Is doing really well at Fleetwood.
In midfield. Defence, aye.
Mm-hmm. And that seems to be, you know, we need that sort of, I think he plays as a defensive midfielder. We need someone who's got that discipline. It sounds like he's doing it really good things. Is there maybe a gateway to him to get into the first team as well? So how good would that be if we'd have caught a kids for the academy who'd actually staked a claim to come into the team for the start of next season? I hope Kelly gets a start sooner rather than later. But more importantly, I think it's excellent that he's been in and around the squad. He's picking up this experience, and again, bodes really, really well for next year as well.
And I think it does send a great message to his, I suppose, former colleagues now in the academy, the B team, the youth setup, because one thing that I think will always excite Celtic fans is a new youth prospect coming through. There's a whole lot of things that we've said that we'd like to see from the modern Celtic, the 2024 and beyond Celtic, and it's obviously domestic dominance, a return to something credible in Europe, you know, various things, a change of structure, a new signing policy. But one thing you definitely want to see happening, and we've not seen it consistently enough, is a raft of talent coming through. A regular conveyor belt, not a Calmac every now and then, a KT every now and then, a Jamesy Forrest, who are all great products of the academy, but very spread out over 20 odd years or whatever since they started at Celtic. You want to see a kid coming through maybe at least once every 2 years, something like that.
I think you need to be looking at one plus a year. You know, if you were putting all that money into anything in any business, you'd be saying, well, stop doing that. That's a waste of time. Mm. I know we've got to be in the Champions League. You have to have a youth setup and all that stuff. But the return on investment is shockingly poor. And you need to look at the structures in there and say, well, who's in charge of that? There's a bit of jobs for the boys in there as well. It's not necessarily best in class. It's who best fits, it suits us kind of thing. I mean, no harm to the guys that are in there, but are they driving these guys on? You can look at the things that, you know, too much of it is about winning games and not developing players. That's a mistake in itself.
Mm-hmm.
You've got to have these guys ready for coming into the first team. So there's a lot of things you'd want to change. But I think one every 2 years is still a failure. That'd be at least one a year.
Yeah, it'd at least be an improvement on what we're seeing now.
It's a start. Maybe that for the next year and then ambitions beyond that.
They'll obviously, along with the Celtic women's team, they'll be playing at the new Barrafield, which I think is due to complete by the end of this year. That could be exciting. That's a step in the right direction. But it's no point just doing it for vanity's sake. Look at our beautiful new training complex. You need to, at the end of the day, produce footballers. That's what it's there for. So let's see. But good luck to Daniel Kelly. He's made a good start to life at Celtic in the first team. And hopefully he does go on to sign that new deal. James, your final comments for the week.
Drink my water. It's exciting, isn't it? It's a good time of year. Just a good time to be a football fan. You're sitting top of the league. Get a wee break. Get some of the injured guys back. Give some guys rests. And then you've got, you know, a Glasgow derby coming up and running, so yeah, it's good to be good to meet them.
This is where the fun starts, says mm-hmm. Brendan. Miff, final word goes to you.
Yeah, listen, there was a time probably in January where we were worried the wheels might come off completely, and by this point we'd maybe even potentially be out of the race because the performances were so poor. But there seems to be a level of consistency coming with the performance. There was bits I didn't like it about the obvious game. But then we probably will never play with that defence again, hopefully. And the other areas of the team are now getting stronger, combined with people coming back from injury, players finding form. So all those things together, momentum was made out to be a big thing 6 weeks ago. Doesn't seem to be as big a thing now. Funny that. But we are where we are. We deserve to be there. it's up to us to see it through.
As that, so a couple of weeks break for the international stuff and then three really big games to come back to. So that wraps things up on this latest episode of the Celtic Exchange Weekly. Thanks to James and Miff for joining me, and thanks to you for tuning in. Don't forget the extra episodes we'll be bringing you this week as the battle to save Celtic continues. But in the meantime, as always, thanks for supporting the Celtic Exchange. We'll see you again soon.
Network.